Welcome to Medical Progress Today's Innovative Ideas series. I'm Paul Howard, the director of the Center for Medical Progress at the Manhattan Institute. Innovative Ideas is a series of podcast interviews conducted with doctors, scientists, health economists, and policy experts to get their thoughts on how we should reform our healthcare system in a way that promotes innovation, competition, and more affordable health insurance options. Joining us today is Regina E. Hertzlinger, the Nancy R. McPherson Professor of Business Administration Chair at the Harvard Business School. She's also a Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. Dr. Hertzlinger writes on consumer-driven healthcare issues and is the author, most recently, of Who Killed Healthcare? America's $2 Trillion Problem and the Consumer-Driven Solution, from McGraw-Hill Books. That's available on Amazon.com. Dr. Hertzlinger, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
To begin the discussion, I think a lot of people who comment on healthcare, in effect, put the cart before the horse. Could you talk for a moment about what are the preconditions for having a competitive, innovative, consumer-friendly marketplace, whether we're talking about chocolate bonbons or healthcare?
Well, that marketplace works for very complicated products that are important to our lives, like safe, reliable automobiles or cheap, reliable computers. And the three ingredients that are critical is, number one, that you and I do the buying, and when we do the buying, we really care about value for the money. Number two, we should have great information, so we may be able to distinguish chocolate bonbons, but most of us really don't know a lot about the reliability of cars and computers, for example, but we have terrific information from outlets like Consumer Reports or our daily paper. And even though we're not a computer whiz, we can buy intelligently. And the third essential ingredient is that it be an industry where entrepreneurial people are just chomping on the bit because they'd like to get involved. That's what made cars and computers, with people like Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Michael Dell. These extraordinary entrepreneurs got into the industry. They made it better and cheaper. We had information. We knew they were doing good stuff for us. And because we buy for ourselves, we rewarded the good entrepreneurs and penalized the bad ones.
I think we've got a pretty good look at what a competitive, innovative healthcare marketplace would look like. But could you just tease that out a little bit in terms of saying, why don't we have that market in healthcare today? What's inhibiting those kinds of developments that you just outlined?
Well, there are two major barriers. One is the tax code, which is, you mentioned those two words and most people's minds go to sleep. But the tax code is such that even though we pay for health insurance, we authorize somebody else, our employer, to buy it for us. So when Harvard University, my employer, buys my health insurance, it's really taking $15,000, that's how much they spend for health insurance, out of what would otherwise be my money, and they use it to buy my health insurance. It's kind of crazy. You know, why should they buy it? Well, the only reason is that they can take that $15,000 and use it tax-free, whereas if I got the $15,000, I can use only after-tax money. So the first rule of any market is that consumers buy things for themselves, and that's violated in healthcare because we have this arcane tax law which promotes agents who do our buying for us. And for most people, if it's not your employer who's buying on your behalf, it's the government who's buying on your behalf. Neither one of these agents, they're nice, they're well-meaning, but, you know, they have no idea what I want. The second problem is the way the insurance companies pay providers, and they pay them for bits and pieces of health care. A hospital stay, a doctor visit, a dialysis treatment. So the doctors in the hospitals have no incentive whatsoever to, number one, to make people healthier, because the healthier they make them, the less money they earn. And secondly, they have no incentive to integrate care and to make sure, for example, that somebody who needs dialysis, which is primarily diabetic, get everything they need, because each and every doctor and hospital is paid for only a bit of care. So it's like buying a car and paying for wheel and axle, a battery, and nobody's responsible for the whole car. So we have to change both our tax code so that we can buy our health insurance and change the way we pay so that entrepreneurial people who really would love to provide all the care that a diabetic needs or everything somebody with a bad back needs, so that these people get rewarded and not penalized. Right now, if they make the victim of a bad back better, they lose money. They don't make money. That's kind of crazy.
That is eminently counterproductive when providers who have a better product to offer consumers get penalized for offering better products. You probably know as much as anyone in America today about what's happening in Washington, what the administration's health reform plans are or are going to be as they've been discussed so far. Do you think that there are things that are happening or are likely to lead to the kind of healthcare marketplace you'd like to see? Less likely? On measure, where are we at right now?
Well, when the president and the Democratic Congress got elected, they were pretty sure that they would get health care reform. Now, what the heck does that mean? To them, what it meant is universal coverage so that everybody in the United States would have health insurance. And they were pretty certain that they could control the costs of this gargantuan system, $2.3 trillion, 70% larger the percentage of GDP than any other country in the world, by offering Medicare and for people who are uninsured and not elderly. Now, Medicare is priced much less than comparable commercial products, and the Democrats thought, well, you know, cheap Medicare, everybody's going to move into Medicare when it's offered in competition with insurance products from Aetna, Cigna, Blue Cross, Blue Shield. One consultant estimated that 120 million people would move out of private health insurance and into Medicare. But among other people, I pointed out that Medicare was cheap only because government accounting is insane. And government accounting permits the government not to recognize a little inconvenient truth about Medicare, which is that it has an unfunded liability with the net present value of $34 trillion. In other words, to pay for the promises that Medicare has made to the people like you and me who have been paying into Medicare all this time, it needs to have $34 trillion in the bank. Of course, it doesn't have a penny of those $34 trillion. So to discharge that debt to the people who have paid for services, Medicare's cost should be increased by about $1 trillion annually. In other words, it's very far from cheap. The realization of this problem with Medicare became very widespread since January. And I believe the Democrats will not be able to offer that as an option. Now they're really in trouble, because what the heck are they going to do? People worry about universal coverage. Yeah, they want it, but do we want to bankrupt the United States? And there is no evidence that anything we have tried to control costs in the U.S., the many alphabet soup kinds of things, have worked worth a darn. The only thing that worked was managed care. It worked by rationing health care, and the American people said, no thanks, I don't want that. So the Dems are in trouble. The Republicans are also in trouble because the American people want universal coverage, and the Republicans don't have anything to offer right now. So it's an interesting period, Paul. The Democrats will be working feverishly to figure out how to get a compelling cost control package. The Republicans will be working feverishly to try to offer something that looks like universal coverage, but isn't quite universal coverage. Stay tuned.
Dr. Hertzlinger, that's, as far as I can tell, that's a terrific summary of where we're at. It's a little depressing, but I think entirely accurate. But for conservatives, and I think that you'd probably agree, this is an issue that conservatives or the Republican Party have not taken as seriously as they should have for a long time now about healthcare reform, healthcare innovation. But for those of us who are concerned, I know you've been thinking about this for decades now, about innovation and about moving towards a more patient-centered healthcare system. In addition to reining in where we think there's waste or problems in the system, what types of reforms should we be pressing for, getting to those people, perhaps in Congress, who need to be thinking about this and should have a plan?
Well, the three elements that we discussed at the beginning of your intelligent line of questioning are key to healthcare. We need to have real healthcare consumers. In other words, rather than having somebody else buying for us, give us the money and let us buy for ourselves. We'll do a better job of it. We also need to have information. I know more about the yogurt I eat for breakfast than about the success of the doctor who might do a mastectomy on me and the infection rates in the hospital in which she practices. And thirdly, we need to change the payment system so that the entrepreneurs who have great ideas about how to make it simultaneously better and cheaper will be encouraged rather than discouraged. Right now, those kinds of people are leaving medicine and they're going into venture capital consulting. Those are all very worthwhile activities. But what a loss to the United States to have the equivalents of Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Michael Dell go into a non-directly medical care kind of activity.
You've been a thoughtful advocate, a very thoughtful advocate of the Swiss model of healthcare. Could you talk for a moment? A lot of people like to talk about international comparisons, what we can learn from France or Germany, but what do you think we can learn from the Swiss model, which you've spent a long time looking at very carefully? And also, what should we do differently to make that vision fit a truly American form of healthcare?
Well, Switzerland is kind of like the United States, although it's much smaller, about the size in citizenship as Massachusetts. It is organized by canton, so it is a federation of states, just as the United States is. And the healthcare system in Switzerland, under a generalized federal set of guidelines, is run by the state. So what's the deal in Switzerland? First of all, everybody's insured. By the way, that includes illegal immigrants. The Swiss are a very practical people. So if an employer hires an illegal immigrant, more or less no problem. If an employer hires an illegal immigrant who has no health insurance, huge problem. So they achieve a very high level of coverage. The bulk of the money comes from the people themselves. Of course, the bulk of the money in any healthcare system comes from the people themselves. In our system, it comes in the form of the taxes we pay and the wages we forego. But in Switzerland, the people pay directly for health insurance. There is no Medicare and there is no Medicaid. So if you're a poor Swiss, rather than have the somewhat degrading experience of being a Medicaid enrollee, up to 40% of U.S. physicians won't see Medicaid patients because they're paid so poorly. in Switzerland, a poor person gets as much money as the average Swiss to buy health insurance, and they buy it for themselves. If you're sick, you pay the same price as everybody else, so there's no discrimination against the sick. But the insurers have formed a reinsurance pool, so they make good insurers who have enrolled a lot of sick people by taking profits away from insurers who have benefited by enrolling a lot of healthy people. This system has nearly universal coverage. It costs 40% less than the United States. And what's very important is Swiss, unlike the Canadians or the Brits, they don't have rationing of health care. I know that because I looked at how the sick Swiss fare. Now, Britain, for example, the UK does about a third of the dialysis per 100,000 people as the US does. That's not true in Switzerland. The UK, which is one of the wealthiest economies in Europe, is the last among the big five economies in its uptake of cancer drugs, and it has the depressingly low cancer survival statistics to show it. That's not true in Switzerland. So the Swiss seem to have what we need. They have universal coverage and they have cost control. I think it would be a great model for us to follow. Plus, Switzerland is not a wacko country. Lots of people admire that country and would not be taken aback with following a model that they have set.
That's a terrific synopsis of the Swiss system. In a nutshell, just as a concluding thought, are you more optimistic than pessimistic that over time we'll move towards more of the model you just described in terms of competition, innovation, patient-centered care, consumer-directed care, that the Swiss have shown a way towards?
Well, Paul, the Swiss system is hardly perfect. They have the same payment system that we do, and they further discourage entrepreneurs by subsidizing public hospitals so that they, inefficient though they may be, can compete with private hospitals. And the doctors are more or less unionized, negotiated as a group with the government. I don't like any of that. But I do like the consumer-driven part of the Swiss system. And it seems to me, Paul, as I've observed the U.S. Congress and the White House since President Obama has been elected, that as they confront the realities of simultaneously getting universal coverage and keeping costs out of control, that there really is no option but to go to a consumer-driven system. There are a lot of pipe dreams about a public program, the wonders of IT, disease management, pay-for-performance, but even the president, director of the office of management and budget, when he, in his prior job, directed the Congressional Budget Office, he scored, in other words, he evaluated all these promises for healthcare cost control as being negligible in their impact. So, if we can't have a public program to ration healthcare, and we do want universal coverage, what is the choice? We have no choice. We must go to a consumer-driven system.
Well, that is a terrific way to end the conversation. We have no choice, I hope, but to do the right thing, and I hope Congress and President Obama listen very carefully to that message. Dr. Hertzinger, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Howard.